Rob Manfred is commissioner of Major League Baseball. Rob Manfred joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Good morning, Rob.
Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Doing well. I'm here alongside Stephen Brent. And I got to ask you about the start times because, my email box is exploding because of it, and people have been on Twitter for the past couple of days saying 22 years we've waited, and we get the mid-afternoon start time and the early afternoon start time. Can you maybe just explain some of the aspects that went into that decision?
Well, I mean, obviously, let's start with Friday, which is the earliest of the start time, probably the most troubling. We have four games that day. There are only so many hours in the day when you can conceivably play, and somebody has to play in that early time slot. In the way that the games fell in terms of travel and potential matchups, it was the Texas-Toronto game that was the most feasible in that early time slot. You know, these time slots are kind of, you can't win, right?
Mm-hmm.
People in New York are complaining that because they're on the West Coast, their games are too late. People in Toronto are saying, they don't want to play a day game, and, there's fans in Vancouver, and the game's too early. So, it's just impossible to keep everybody happy when you have a sport that covers four time zones.
I think the assumption here, Rob, would be that that American television, that your rights holders dictate this to a large degree, and that because we are in a country that is not America, we're going to be at the low end of the food chain in terms of start times. That the Blue Jays being in prime time was not going to be an option at this stage, no matter what. Is that fair or unfair?
That's unfair. The Blue Jays are going to be in prime time on Sunday night, which may be the most important night of the week for us. I'll say two things about that. If you'd like to come down and visit the conference room, next door to my office, you will see the whiteboards where those of us at Major League Baseball laid out the start times in the way that we thought was the fairest from the perspective of the competition that's going to go on in the postseason. Before we do that, we do solicit input from our broadcast partners, but I think Sunday night sort of dispels the notion that we're going to allow a broadcaster to dictate that Toronto's not going to play in a primetime window.
Rob, one of the other questions here is the dome, and in particular, who controls the dome? In 92 and 93, the dome was closed for games here in Toronto. Sort of the backstory there was that there was concern that, well, if the dome's open and you have to close and it doesn't work, we're going to look silly. Therefore, let's just leave it closed and forget about that issue. I mean, times have changed. The dome has proven that it can open and close in game. What will the logistics be? What will the decision-making process be when it comes to deciding whether or not the dome is going to be open and when or if the dome needs to be closed?
Well, first and most important, Major League Baseball will control the decision of whether the dome is open or closed. I think it probably goes without saying that in a series this important, leaving that decision to the home team probably not appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Both there are a set of criteria that have been established for making the decision as to whether the dome's going to be open or closed. Both teams are made aware of those criteria, and we'll proceed based on those criteria.
So that's just in terms of what temperature, probability, precipitation, stuff like that.
Temperature,
Rob?
Weather, things like that.
Is it? Would you? Is there a circumstance ever where you would begin a game with it open and have the option to close it, considering you can do that with the roof here?
We'd like to avoid that, but it's not impossible.
Okay.
In conversation with Rob Manfred, Major League Baseball Commissioner. Rob, when you look at the playoffs this year, when you look at the competitive balance in baseball this year, I mean, we all know that teams go through the wild card, or teams that get in through the wild card berth have had an enormous track record of success when it comes to going on to win the World Series. This year we saw kind of a rare a rarity where the National League Central had teams that had, I believe, the three best records, or certainly three of the best records. Now we're in a situation where one of the Pirates and Cubs is going to be eliminated. The Cardinals had the best record, 100 wins. They could go out as well. I mean, I know you've heard all these arguments. I like things the way they are right now, the way the wild card format is. I mean, you're going to have seasons like this. It's just going to work out that way, that those teams happen to be so good. Is there any change you foresee in the playoff format in the immediate future?
Well, I have to say, at the beginning, you know, I've done a lot of these interviews in the last few days. You are the first person that started with the premise that they like things the way they are. And I'm so happy to find you, because I'm in the same boat. You are going to – I think when you think about playoff formats, you have to think about the fundamental incentives that are created by the format. And you can't get caught up in the results of any one particular year. And so let's talk about the incentives. We play an unbalanced schedule. Once you accept the fact that you play an unbalanced schedule, the division championship has to be meaningful, right? So a team with 90 wins in a division that has three really weak teams that they play 18 times is not the same as a team that has 90 wins and plays in a division where everybody's really competitive in that particular year. So, you know, unbalanced schedule has to give special weight to being able to win the division. And then secondly, when we went to the second wild card, really the idea was that these one-game play-ins, which I think it's hard to argue with the notion that they create a lot of excitement. I was in Yankee Stadium last night. It was great. I can't wait to get – I'm going to Pittsburgh later on this afternoon. Can't wait to see that Pittsburgh Cub game. They're very exciting. The one-game playoffs are designed to make it harder for the wild card to proceed without creating a long layoff for the division winners that also it can be a disadvantage for the division winners.
I guess, you know, no sport that I know of, Rob, no league has ever makes their postseason shorter. But I guess, the one thing you could do is you could extend the division series to best of seven. You could add that layer. Is that a bridge too far in terms of, you know, the length of the regular season and going deeper into November, or is that something you'd consider?
Look, I think that, we got a lot of product in the month of October in terms of playoff baseball. This year we're going to finish on the 4th of November. I just think lengthening that round of the playoffs without some shortening of the season is not realistic.
Rob, where do things stand right now with Pete Rose and his reinstatement in the game? Into the game, well, I'm sorry.
His request for reinstatement. I met with Mr. Rose last week. We've done a really thorough review of the facts surrounding Mr. Rose's original ban and what has happened since that time. What I told Pete was that I would have him a decision by the end of the year, and I intend to stick to that timetable.
What are the criteria for that, Rob? It's in terms of, he applies for reinstatement. You go back over the original evidence, and as you say, kind of his track record since then. But, how much of this is purely is procedural, and how much of it is at the discretion, at your discretion, the discretion of the commissioner?
Well, I would say this. I think it's most important that I be guided by the Major League Constitution, which creates and controls this office. We have a very specific rule about gambling and its consequences. We have another rule that contemplates the possibility of a reinstatement, and of course we have the things that Commissioner Giamatti wrote and said at the time of the original ban, and I think you need to take all of those things into account in making a decision. Most important on this issue is the decision is one that must be designed to protect the integrity of the game. People get confused with respect to this topic. There are two distinct issues involved, only one of which is within my control. The one that's in front of me is whether or not Pete Rose should be taken off the permanently ineligible list, which, if I did that, would allow him to work in the game. He could be a manager. He could be a general manager. He could work for a club. Okay, that's the decision I have in front of me, and I think making that decision, you have to be guided by concerns about the integrity of the game, given the issues that Mr. Rose has been involved with. There is a separate issue as to whether or not he should be eligible to be voted into the Hall of Fame. That's a Hall of Fame eligibility issue. The Hall of Fame is independent from Major League Baseball. I am on the Hall of Fame board, but I don't have the authority to change the rules that govern Hall of Fame eligibility.
But Rob, what would be the factors? And again, and I assume you're going to go back to the original investigation, Rose investigation, and again, everything that has come out subsequently and everything Pete has said and not said over the years, but in terms of deciding whether it's in the best interest of baseball to reinstate Pete Rose, and I say not the Hall of Fame discussion, but the other discussion, on what criteria would you make that decision?
I think you'd have to use the words of Commissioner Giamatti, ask yourself whether Mr. Rose has reconfigured his life in a way that if he were to be employed by a club, he no longer would present a threat to the integrity of the game.
Rob, between at least considering Pete Rose's position on the permanently ineligible list, between your expressed support for at least the possibility, not necessarily the likelihood, of baseball in Montreal or another franchise outside of the United States of America, you've taken a pretty progressive stance for baseball commissioner, I guess. Yeah, I mean, compared to some of your predecessors, compared to Bud, frankly, from a neutral position, it appears to be a little more progressive. How much pushback or how much backroom politicking have you had to do to get some of these issues, or I should say, to be able to take this type of a stance? You know, because these are issues that Bud had different opinions on, quite frankly, I think, than you did.
Well, look, I think that one of our goals, me and the management team, Tony Petitti, Pat Courtney, Joe Torre, that are working with me here, one of our goals at the beginning was to try to be open, at least open to consideration on issues that some people regarded to be resolved or closed because of Commissioner Selig's view. You know, no one has more respect for Commissioner Selig. He was a man of strong views and principles. He was right far more than he was wrong, and did a fantastic job for the game. Having said that, after 23 years, I think it's important for the institution to project an air of openness to consideration and reconsideration to changes in the game.
Do you think because of the history, the strong imprint that baseball commissioners, individual baseball commissioners, including Bud, have made on the game, that the commissioner's office in baseball is different fundamentally than the office of commissioner of the National Basketball Association or the National Football League or any other sporting business of that scale?
No, one of the nice things about this job is you get to know the other commissioners a little bit. It is sort of a small little fraternity. But I really do believe that the roles of the four commissioners are essentially the same. At its core, each commissioner has to be responsible for the integrity of the play on the field. Those are the most difficult issues always. And, then you run a big business as well, and you have to be aware and on top of those fundamental business concerns. But if you really think about the things that people write about commissioners, broadly defined, they are those issues that relate to the integrity of the game.
A lot of emphasis this year, obviously, in pace of play. How, and I know we are getting into the postseason where there will be even more tests for this, or more challenges, I should say, but how happy have you been with the pace of play changes, and might we see more changes in effect next year?
Well, let me say three things about this year's effort. First of all, I think the most important thing was the level of support that we got from the players on the pace of game initiatives. You know, when you get into changes to the game on the field, if you don't have the players, you're not going to be successful. And I think the players were really cooperative with respect to our effort. Secondly, you know, our average game time was down 6 minutes. That's a very significant decline. I mean, you know, cutting 6 minutes out of your average game is a big change, and I think directionally it is a really good thing for us. Personally, I think that pace of game is one of those issues that's going to be an ongoing challenge for us. You know, reducing your average game time 6 minutes does not get you to a point that you can say, oh, well, you know, we've solved that problem. I think we will have discussions with the Players Association over the course of this winter, and certainly in conjunction with the collective bargaining negotiations in 2016. And I'm hopeful that we will continue to make strides on this issue.
Is the pitch clock that we saw in the Arizona Fall League last year, is that still a viable option, or regarded as a potential solution in the major leagues, or is that dead?
Yeah, I think it's a no. I think it's a viable option for the big leagues. I mean, obviously, we liked it enough in the Arizona Fall League that you know, we made a considerable investment to use those pitch clocks at the AA and AAA level. I think that experiment was successful from a game time perspective in the minor leagues. Excuse me. And we also think it's important in terms of educating players about what it's like to play with a pitch clock. So it may not be next year, but I think this is something that we will continue to look at.
Before we let you run, I did want to ask you about Montreal, and we know that there's going to be another exhibition series in Montreal. It'll be the Red Sox. I'm sure those games will be sold out again. Do you have any further meetings planned with Mayor Denny Coderre from Montreal? And have you been able to, at least in your own mind, identify a potential ownership group in that city?
Well, let me take... There's a couple of questions in there. Number one, I do not have any further meetings planned with the mayor of Montreal. And, you know, we are not at a point in the process where we have begun to identify a particular ownership group. I know there's a number of business leaders that are involved in the effort, and, you know, I assume that an ownership group would coalesce. Depending on what exactly the circumstances are, I think the challenge for Montreal remains, we need, I don't expect them to build a stadium without having a team, but I think Montreal has a long way to go in terms of having a viable plan for a stadium, and by that I mean a location and a financing plan that would allow the process to move forward.
Commissioner, we appreciate you joining us today. Thanks so much. Have a great postseason. It got off to a great start last night.
Yeah, it did, and I'm looking forward to being in Toronto on Friday.